kept, and maybe I just ruin all the things around here.
Well, I've got the 22 minutes here, so yeah, okay, well, perfect. We can keep talking about the same things that we are talking about. I'm really interested in what was it like working with your husband on the copy desk? Did you both work there?
Oh, yeah. As I say, sometimes it was sharing the same typewriter. But, you know, other times maybe, you know, we didn't always have exactly the same hours, although quite frequently. And I remember we were Christmas Eve and Christmas Day and New Year's Eve and New Year's Day, you know, all of those things, because there were a couple of the people around there who had children, and they always got priority to get the days off. Mm-hmm. But I was always very respectful of him just because of his experience. And he kept in touch with this bunch of people from the St. Joe Gazette. In fact, many times when we'd go on a vacation, we'd work our shift, get off around 12:30, drive to St. Joe, Missouri, but stop. There's a motel we used to stop at partway where they just left the key in the door and expected us to come in. But he was in touch with some of the foremen in the composing room. We always loved the printers and liked to work with them. And they had a letter exchange system. You know, I'd write you and you'd take my letter and then send it on to the next one. There were about five or six people. Well, now they're, I think, mostly dead and gone now, because I was sort of the kid in the group, you know.
And those are, you know, not traditional 9-to-5 jobs,
obviously. No.
How did that impact your greater life and, you know, your friends and family and how you...
Well, I rather liked it, frankly, that, you know, you could say, well, you wanted to do something, say, on a Wednesday. Well, usually there'd be a lot more, it'd be better to go out for dinner or something because it isn't as crowded. Whereas if you're always off Saturday and Sunday, that's when everybody else is.
Did you see, you know, sometimes it can be a kind of stressful profession.
Oh, yes.
Depending on people's position. Did you see the toll that it took on some of your colleagues over the years? Or did it take any toll, I suppose?
Well, of course, one thing, I don't know in the case of, say, some reporters and so on, if maybe they were wrestling things between a news source and their editor and things like that, because I guess a lot of it was that you didn't just spill your guts to everybody. And I know sometimes, you know, people that are, you know, like at adjoining desks, and they're telling each other every problem they have and everything like that. Well, this was not that kind of a group. I think maybe, to me, it was more mature and more, it was easier to live like that than to think, oh my gosh, these two are fighting or these two don't get along or something. That, you know, obviously there's conflicts in certain groups and that kind of thing.
And journalists, even these days, are kind of notorious for, you know, hard living. Was that the case with some of your older colleagues at the time?
No, I don't really remember that. I know we used to go over to the little wagon and drink some beer, but nobody was getting drunk. And, of course, for one thing, when you're working till, say, 11:30, 12 o'clock, you'd have to be just drowning them like crazy. But I do remember that sometimes if I had a day off in the middle of the week and I'd be running some errands or something, I felt perfectly comfortable walking into the little wagon by myself, knowing that the bartenders knew me and that there might be a friend sitting there. But it was, and back in those days, you know, women didn't necessarily wander into bars by themselves.
Mm-hmm. And they closed a couple years ago, didn't they?
I think they may have, yeah. Because that just was where everybody was. And the conversations were very good simply because it was about everything. Mm-hmm. That I remember there was one newbie in sports, and after he was over there with us once, while we were talking afterward, all he could talk about was sports. And we weren't used to that. You know, people like Bob Sorensen and John Wiebusch and so on, yeah, they happen to work in sports, but they talk about movies, they talk about politics, you're just like any human being would. Where this other guy, well, The twins seem to have a better chance. What do you think of this and that, you know? And the sports guys were disgusted by it.
How did you get into writing stories, or how long had you been at the Star Tribune when you started doing, you said, you know, travel?
Well, that is, that I initiated. Mm-hmm. It would say that, hey, I'm going to go to Germany, for example, to visit relatives, and that I thought I would have a unique in there because I would be visiting with family and that kind of thing. And a lot of the travel stories, you didn't get paid for, you got extra time off. And I didn't write about every place I ever went, but I remember when I went to the Soviet Union coming back, and usually I kind of judged by, you know, was this a place that hadn't been written about much and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. That seems like very, you know, enlightening experiences, being able to, you say, Cuba and Mexico and Soviet Union. Mm-hmm. You know, what was that like for you, you know, having been from North Dakota?
Yes. Well, I loved doing it, and it was, I don't like to travel alone. I didn't mind like going to Germany by myself because there'd be people to meet me, but I traveled sometimes with a friend or family member, and then I was at Williamsburg for one of these, what do they call them, the adult, older adult things. And anyway, got to know this woman from Florida, and we corresponded and so on. Well, anyway, one day she called me, and she traveled everywhere. And she said, well, I've never been to Malta. Why don't you go with me? Well, I hadn't thought of going to Malta, but I had no reason not to, so I went with her. And then another time there was somebody who wanted to go to Eastern Europe. It was Czechoslovakia then, now it's the Czech Republic, and Poland and Hungary. And I had a pen pal in Hungary that when they kicked out the communists, why, they were looking for some connections over here. And of course, I love to write letters. So there was this family in Budapest, and so we corresponded, and I could figure out later why we were matched up, because the wife of the family edited a magazine there. So anyway, why, he met me there and toured me around Budapest, and then took me to his house where we had the most marvelous meal his wife had cooked. And we kept in touch for a while, but then he definitely, you know, they were getting the opportunity after the communists were gone, and he was making all these business trips and so on, so that just kind of died.
But that's very interesting, though. What are some of the favorite places that you covered? And what was it like for you writing again, you know?
Well, I enjoyed it. And I also enjoyed, like, when the Milwaukee Journal picked some things up. And one thing, when you're freelancing, of course, you are writing about what you want. Nobody's telling you, you've got to write this. And you know, that was fun. Well, you know, for example, I got the paper to send me back to my hometown because they had spruced up the Custer House, and they had docents taking you through. And it was a neat deal. I hope it's still going like that, because they were in costume, and they said, well, the general and his wife aren't here right now, but, you know, showing you around and everything. This is one of my favorite books, The Court-Martial, because this is assuming he didn't die at the Little Bighorn, but he was court-martialed. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that has always fascinated me. And that one I was doing because it was fun to publicize that. And I can't remember if I did a story, because the last time I was back there, it was for the bicentennial of the Lewis and Clark expedition, mm-hmm. because it spent more time in my hometown than any place else. And it was centralized at the University of Mary in Bismarck. And I know the woman who was the president, she's the one whose ancestor taught Lawrence Welk, you know, fascinating woman, marvelous, intelligent woman. But that was probably one of the last ones. And I see, you know, freelance, the paper uses freelance all over the place, but I haven't done exotic travel as much lately. That, you know, with the airlines screwing things up, and then so many places. Well, for example, all my life I wanted to visit Egypt, you know, reading it in the National Geographic when I grew up. Well, what did it for me, and this was quite a long time ago, is when a busload of tourists was attacked there. Not that they had anything against the tourists, but they knew tourism was a big industry. So if you kill people, that will kill the government. And so, you know, I did not particularly want to die for somebody else's cause.
For a travel article in the Star Tribune.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you ever, we haven't talked about this, but did you like copy editing? And did you ever want to transition to like a different beat? Or was that where you kind of felt your passion was? Or your
well, I do like editing. In fact, I always say, I don't know if it's a blessing or a curse. When I pick up something, immediately my eye falls on the mistake. And this glamorous cousin of mine, who was considerably older than I, when I was visiting in Mexico with them, I pick up a menu and I point this out, there was a misspelling, and she said, "Marilyn, you did not come here to proofread the menu. Order!"
I just read an article with someone, a former copy editor, saying that they can't enjoy things as much as they used to because
well, and it's weird how many mistakes are never corrected. People will have a hand-painted sign with a misspelled word. And I thought, well, if you're paying somebody to paint the sign, at least take another look at it, for heaven's sakes.
Uh-huh. Yeah. have these standards relaxed overall, do you think, because there's so much everywhere?
Well, I think people are getting sloppy. Plus, you've got these tweets and Twitters, where it's thank you for, you know, all of that stuff. And I really wonder if we're going to turn out generations of kids that can't spell. Mm-hmm. And one of my hopes is that feedback I'm getting with these adult immigrants that I tutor, because they are very intelligent, and they are teaching them very complicated words. I wish ubiquitous we did recently. And then I can't remember the one last Wednesday, which was multisyllabic, and basically what it means is a very multi-ethnic type society. Because mm-hmm. the teacher would say, well, yeah, look around the room here. And because they are from all over. The new students last week were from Ethiopia and Mexico and Vietnam. And one of my favorites, who now unfortunately has gone back, but he was from Mexico, and I asked where he was from. Guadalajara. Well, I practically fell on him to talk about all the things I loved about his hometown, you know. But he is going back there to take some kind of test or something. He's hoping to get a scholarship to London. And I would bet on him, frankly, because he is so bright and so charming and so international that anybody that doesn't grab on him as an ambassador is losing something.
As you were moving towards retirement, you know, how did you decide to take retirement at that time in 1991?
Well, I had heard some rumors that there were going to be changes, and I think some of it might have been even in the ownership. You know, nobody actually sat me down and said, well, you should know this, but it was just sort of the idea that I think things are not going to change for the better. And then also, people had been leaving and dying in some cases. You know, that the loss of Bob Sorensen was a tremendous one because, well, I did a lot of book reviews for him, and he used to just hand me the keys to the bookcase and I should pick anything I wanted because he knew, A, I would give it whatever he wanted. You know, if he wanted a cut line, I'd do that. If he wanted a full-fledged review, I'd do that. And he knew certain subjects. But he also knew which ones he could interest me in. So that was great, which is why I am surrounded by as many books as I am here.
Uh-huh. And what changes were there, or what did it feel like on that Friday when you went back to work, or when you woke up and you didn't have to go to work?
Well, you know, I didn't have a huge qualm of some kind. I know you hear retirees from various kinds of jobs, you know, say they just looked around and, you know, what am I going to do? Well, I always was interested in theater and concerts and things, but also I do think I was blessed in being hooked on to this tutoring business. That the first place, and I can't remember if somebody actually asked me to do it, but originally it was this school on Lake Street. But then after a while, they decided that instead of having adult volunteers, they were getting kids from Breck and places like that. But then I then went on to another place, which was not as good, at least for me, because this was more high school age. And the thing I remember is, you know, I always feel do what the teacher tells you to do, whatever to explore. Well, anyway, one day I found myself sitting there with a Somali woman discussing the Emperor Maximilian of Mexico. And I'm fascinated with Mexican history, as you can see with all the books over there. But of all the things that Somali woman should know, that is not high on the list. And so that's why when I got into these adults, and originally this class was over there near the cathedral, St. Mark's. But then I heard later that it was going to convert to condos or something. So now it's at 8th and Hennepin. And it couldn't be a better location for me, you know. And that was a bank building. And in the basement, which is where the vaults were and everything, well, they have a library for the students, and they have a ping pong table where I love to watch, for example, an Egyptian playing with a Chinese ping pong and stuff. But now there was a story just recently where that building has been sold, and I thought, oh Lord. But the school is delighted because the people taking over are going to let the school stay on the first few floors, and they're going to convert the uppers to condos or something. But the new owners will be taking over things like security and all of the day-to-day things. But I have just been so tickled with these adults that they are so intelligent and, you know, such broad, you know, some of them can speak half a dozen languages, you know, and they love to ask questions, which I love, because, you know, so many times, you know, people will explain long words to you, but I know one time their teacher had written something on the board, dent. They'd never encountered the word. They said, well, you know, that's when you've got a problem with your car. There's a dent in the side of the car. Somebody will explain a multisyllabic word, but they would not give these others.
Mm-hmm. It kind of heralds back to your roots a little bit, too, with your parents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that was another thing that I didn't... when my dad got, after World War II, when my dad got letters from some of his family, he was the one that really, because the family was scattered terribly, but they all knew that they had an uncle in Mandan, North Dakota, and that's the way it was addressed, Henry C. Kinzel, Mandan, North Dakota. Well, if he lived in New York, he never would have gotten it. So anyway, it was my dad who would write to his sister and say, well, your son is over here on the Eastern Front and that sort of thing. He helped bring them together. And then he was planning to bring some of them over to North Dakota. In fact, he bought farmland. But when he died, my mom and I just figured that we couldn't handle all of that. But I remember my dad and mom sending packages after the war and, you know, things like shoes and socks, you know, stuff like that.
That was a kind of a hard time for Germany, too.
Definitely, yes. And of course, you know, they had been the enemy, thanks to good old Adolf, but, you know, it wasn't their fault, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. When you were in Germany, did you run into any newspapers or run into their newspapers and notice any difference from what you do at the Star Trek?
Not really. You know, I'd see, you know, something on a newsstand or something, but one thing, you know, with this German writing, you know, you have to figure out the writing before you even figure out what the words are. You know, it's a little like Arabic, which is beautiful to look at, but, you know, how do you read it with all the curlicues and umlauts and things like that?
A whole different, you know, way of setting up the characters, right?
That's right.
And German, don't they have, you know, words that are 25 letters long?
Exactly. And if you can break them up, you can see, oh yeah, they're very logical in many cases. It's telling you, you know, this is the debris left after a fire or something like that. But when you first look at it, it's that long.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other stories that stand out to you over the years at the Star Tribune or with your colleagues? I know that's a broad question, but.
Well, one thing, do remember, this has been a long, long time. And of course, it isn't that, you know, we all got together all the time. Now, there was a group that would get together for lunch every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of drifted apart. And I still, once in a very great while, would get together with Al Sickerman and Dick Parker. Mm-hmm. And we usually up at the Modern in Northeast Minneapolis. But it's been quite a while. And I'm still in touch with Tom Holton, who was the slot man, and he was in this group that used to have lunch. And I'm trying to think. I've run into Steve Ronald, like at a grocery store or something, but that's just pure happenstance, you know. I ran into him also at a SPCO concert. And incidentally, that, I don't know if you can see, that messy picture on the bottom on my, that's Al Sickerman with chocolate all over his face.
What's that from?
I can't remember. It was something where he was, you know, publicizing something. I'm a chocoholic. And another one I have up there, which is a quote I dearly love. All you need is love, but a little chocolate now and then doesn't hurt. And that is by my favorite cartoonist, Charles Schulz. I have his biography over there, too.
Uh-huh. How was this journalism, was it, you know, all you thought it would be? Was it, what's your thoughts on your career in journalism?
Well, I'm glad I did it. I had some fun. I was not the one that was interviewing the big stars, but I did interview Anderson Cooper's mother, Gloria Vanderbilt. And I always remember that because I interviewed her in her hotel room, and she just was wearing a robe. You know, this was no, I am the wealthiest woman in the world. But every time I see him on CNN, I always think of that. And well, those top books up there are autographed to me. The one you can see the most of, Life and Death in Shanghai, that was written by a Chinese woman who, well, she was of a family that was well-to-do, and of course the revolutionaries took it over. Well, there was a staff meeting one day, and I had found out she was going to speak in Northfield at one of the colleges, and I said, you've got to interview that woman. And they said, well, Marilyn, why don't you? And so somebody else did my editing jobs, and I went there. Well, we really hit it off. She autographed the book to me, and we carried on a correspondence for a long time. And a few months before she died, I got this letter about, you know, life is not worth living, that I can't drive anymore. She lived in Washington, D.C., and, you know, I knew something was going to happen. And I have another book autographed by the father of the current senator from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, because I worked with him. And it was good, and I always liked having a personal connection, you know, that, well, because one thing, where, like in the case of Nian Sheng, you know, that wasn't my beat or anything else, but they figured I had read the book, I was emotionally involved, I was the one who should go to Northfield.
It seems like you would have made a very good foreign correspondent for some papers.
Well, it would depend probably where it was, because I've always felt a foreign correspondent should know the language of the country where they're stationed. And that could be very difficult because, well, the language I knew best was Spanish. Mm-hmm. Because I told you, you know, that I had to take it, but I took it in high school, and then I took some more in junior college. But you have to keep using it, which is another thing I keep telling the immigrants. Because, well, I've traveled to Spain, and when I traveled to Central America, I could use it. When I traveled to visit my cousin in Mexico, I could use it. I'm not using it now, and I'm finding that like even some words in the crossword puzzles, I'm looking up more. Mm-hmm. And I know at this immigrant school too, like during the breaks, you know, where some of them get together, talk English, you know, because you should be using the language, because especially if you're living with people, your family, you know, you'd obviously be more likely to be speaking that language with them, and you need the practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, language, it has to kind of get in your brain and become natural.
That's right. Because I've gotten to the point now where I've had to use my dictionaries for more, you know, like if I'm trying to figure out if something, well, like in Spanish, is it a feminine or masculine word? Mm-hmm. And then, of course, that also gets involved that they use more articles than we do. You know, el gato, where we just say cat, you know.
Do you want to tell me about some of these names down here that you have?
Okay. Well, yeah, I told you about Cedric, who was the big name, Cedric Adams. Mm-hmm. Cliff Semak, who was this great science fiction writer. Will Jones was the entertainment columnist, and he was the one who, you know, when the celebrities would come to town, he'd be the interviewer. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now, excuse me, they've divided up entertainment so much that you've got the rock writers, and John Bream was there when I was, and I remember he used to have earplugs to keep from being deafened going to these concerts, and Michael Anthony, he was a real loss to the paper, because he knows these things, and he would give you the things you needed before you'd go to this opera or to this play. And I've run into him at a couple of things. For example, my friend and I had season tickets to the opera, and they had a preliminary show for the Wuthering Heights, you know, which was the world premiere here, and he was there. He wasn't speaking or anything, but I visited with him afterward, and then he had written for one of these web papers. Maybe you've probably seen it before, long before I did. But anyway, my computer addicted friend gave me a printout of it. And it's what you need to know before you go. For example, that Wuthering Heights was written by this guy who'd written all these this music for the Hitchcock movies and for Citizen Kane and all of that. And he wrote it here in Minneapolis while he was courting his second wife. And this was all in Mike Anthony's story. And his story was considerably better than the opera, by the way. But anyway, that's what you need. Whereas now with all these freelancers, okay, yeah, this freelancer has gone to this show, which means that instead of getting it reviewed the next day, because that's one thing I remembered when we had John K. Sherman and Norm Hauk reviewing, they came in after the concert, sat down and wrote the review. Well, now, if the concert's on Thursday, you'll be lucky if you see the review by Sunday, which is probably when the run is over.
In the newspaper.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Now, of course, they'd argue that, well, it's on the computer. Although I even wonder if some of them, you know, do it that fast either, because it's difficult. I did a few reviews. There was one of a Broadway show I had seen on Broadway, and I did review here, but it's pressure to come right after the final curtain and sit down and do the review. But, you know, to me, that's what you owe your reader, that because if somebody's thinking of going, you want to give them enough ammunition to know if they should go. And I'm an avid reader of reviews, even though I'm not thrilled with most of them that appear, because many times what they say as a laudatory thing makes me think, I wouldn't go to that at gunpoint. You know, they'll liken it to such and such a performer that I know I wouldn't go to see.
And what did Cliff Semak, is that?
Yeah, he did science type writing, but he is the guy who writes the good science fiction.
But he did science writing for this.
Yes.
Was it the Tribune or the Star at this time?
Well, it was the Star Tribune at that point. Because it seems to me when I first started there, it was the Tribune, and that's why we were working late at night, whereas they merged, you know.
Oh, sure, of course. Did that change your hours then when that happened?
Well, it seems to me, especially in, I think basically when I did was in the women's department, those were more day hours, because of course the people we were contacting were more day people. But otherwise it was basically 3:30 to midnight. Although, like on Saturday, for the Sunday paper, usually at least one person, many times me, would come in to proofread the first pages, because, and I'm pretty sure Kennedy was assassinated on a Saturday. I wouldn't swear to it, but I do remember I'd been handling this all that day, and I looked the slot man in the eye when it was getting close to my leaving time, and I said, if you send me home now, I'll never forgive you. Because, you know, I carried the ball that far, and I wanted to get it across the finish line.
What was that like then? You know, the whole assassination and all the investigations surrounding it? And
well, you know, it's funny. The stuff afterward, it was I was not as filtered on as the day it happened. But I was sort of appalled later on when everybody came up with their own little theory and all of that, because at the time, you know, we were interested, you know, who is this guy? Where did he come from? And is the president really dead? And all of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. What was the Star Tribune doing? You were doing original reporting on this then?
Well, I was not, but I was getting it from all the... See, that was another thing. On the copy desk, a major story, they might give you... This was paper copy, of course. They might give you five versions. AP, UPI, maybe the Washington Post and all of that. And sometimes... The news desk would indicate this should be your core story, but you'll find details in the other stories. And other times, it would be up to you to pick the best points, and then at the top it would say, from Tribune Wire Services, which is kind of neat. And I could see why sometimes maybe they didn't want to trust anybody's decision, that somebody had read it and thought, well, this is pretty well organized, but there's a few little details we might need.
Mm-hmm. So this was an opportunity also to make sure that everything was kind of consistent.
That's right.
When this was coming out, when all these details were coming out, because the president had just been assassinated, were there strange stories coming from some places and extraneous details coming from others?
Well, you know, I don't recall it that day. It's later on when every little publicity hound started thinking and making up stories, and, you know, then later on made movies about it and everything else, that at the time, I think you had basically pretty hardcore reporters. They were just there to watch the president wave as he went through town, and then suddenly, hey, wait a minute, what happened there? Mm-hmm. But later on, once people get to think about it and get to realize, well, hey, I can get more publicity by giving my theories and stuff.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for talking to me. It's been a great pleasure.
Well, it's been fun to visit with you. As you can see, I love to think about some of these things, and you let me remember some stuff. You know, like some of these names. I thought, well, gee, you know, I didn't know how familiar you were, but a certain period, especially of all the names, this is the name that would really crack the ice. And I couldn't tell you when he died or anything like that, but it's been a long time. But, you know, he was the big man. And you usually didn't see him that much. He had an office there, but you didn't see him that much. That, as I say, he'd mostly be communicating by phone. He'd call me and say, hey, this column just moved, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But he was a, you know, well-known columnist.
Yes, and plus the radio figure. Because I always remember that thing where the pilot said you could see the lights go out all over the Twin Cities when he went off the air.
That's great. Is there anything else that you want to add, or any... other memories you want to share?
I can't think of anything offhand, although sometimes, you know, it's just like when my friend and I would go to the opera, I'd be trying to think of a name before the opera. Well, as soon as the opera starts, why, then I'll think of it, you know.
I know how that works. Well, thank you very much again.
Well, you are welcome, and it's been enjoyable, and it's reminded me of things, and I wish that I'd been able to continue getting together with some of these folks. But, in fact, you know, I still can call Al, and he's the guy when I've got a problem with my TV, because he's an electronic genius, by the way. And he, you know, has done little things like that. And I just noticed in the paper that Catherine Watson, this was in a shirt tail under a freelance travel story, where she's going to be, what is it, teaching writing in Spain this summer, which to me is very difficult, you know, that I don't know how fluent she is in Spanish, but I would think that would be one of the first things you'd have to know. But, well, for example, I talked to her before I went to Cuba, because she had been over there. And, you know, I think it was nice when we had more of our own bylined people doing this. But, you know, I realize it's cheaper sometimes with this other stuff, so...